In this episode of Doctor Who Podchuck, West Coast correspondent Joshua Lou Friedman is back with us, filling us in on his UK film project and his time in the UK with many Doctor Who-related people. If you're listening to the enhanced podcast version of our show, you will want to catch all the photos in that segment. Tara Wheeler reports in from San Diego Comic-Con. We also review the classic Doctor Who Robots of Death. All that and more in this episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscribers. Go to arttrap.com/podchucksupporter to become a supporting subscriber. This episode also brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode also brought to you by Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. Check out their website at dlayer.net. That's D as in dragon, layer.net. Ooh.
Oh, excuse me. Live from the seedy side of Calder City, this is Doctor Who Podchuck. Doctor Who Podchuck.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy in its 25th year presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 215. My name is Ken Deep, alongside Mr. Lewis Trapani.
Hello, the seedy side. Wow, okay.
The seedy side across the great pond, none other than Mr. James Norton.
Hello.
And a man who just returned from across the pond, but he's back in L.A., one of our L.A. correspondents, none other than Joshua Lou Friedman.
Hey.
How's Yo.
Welcome back, and Joshua.
Good to be back. Thank you, guys.
So it's another episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. We have a few things to cover in today's episode. We'll be talking a little bit about Robots of Death in the first of our classic episode, recommended classic episode segment thingy to do list something.
What's it? Yeah.
I mean, we've had a lot of emails about.
Well, now you just spoiled it all. Now they know we're recommending it.
Well, we may not recommend it.
Well,
no.
We may not recommend. That's, we may hate Robots of Death and tell you not to
stop,
go.
Stop.
Well, we didn't do our review.
We'll
yet.
Also be talking with Joshua Lou Friedman about his trip to London and the UK. He went not.
Oh,
just
he went to London and the UK.
Yeah,
no, other parts of the UK. You did a little bit of traveling. You were there for well over a month, I think, right?
I was there since May, yeah.
Wow.
So you had a few Doctor Who-related experiences, so we'll talk about that as well. And a little bit of news. There is some news to report on the Doctor Who front, some things that have cropped up since the last time we spoke. Is that the case?
Yeah, yeah, and last time I was here, I was reviewing, I was helping you guys review the robot, with the Tom Baker, we're doing the regeneration episodes, right?
Oh, okay.
And now yes, I'm right. Back, and it's Robots of Death. So I think you guys are only having me on the show if there's a
yes.
If the word robot is in it, yes.
And it's revealed.
Episode. Maybe that means by proxy you'll have me back for like Androids of Tara or the Android Invasion.
We'll keep you in mind. Yes, absolutely.
Finally.
So Ken mentioned some Doctor Who news. I guess he was alluding to that they're now shooting the Christmas special, which is slated for, surprisingly, for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced, has this been officially announced? I know it's been running through the news cycles that there are two actors that were announced.
Yeah.
One's an opera singer and one's the one from the Harry Potter movies.
Michael Gambon, yeah, he plays Dumbledore and on many other things. He's a great actor. Jesus.
He played Jesus?
No, no, but I wouldn't be surprised. And the man's man's body of work, he's been around. He's been around. Although yes, the cook thief, his wife and her lover, I recommend that. It's one of his finest roles.
And James, what was the name of that opera singer that's cast as well?
Catherine Jenkins as well, yes. She's a Welsh opera singer, very talented and absolutely gorgeous to boot. I'm very interested to see what role she's going to fill within the episode, because she's not an actress, as far as I'm aware. This is the first thing that she'll have ever have appeared in. So
unless she's being brought on for her singing capabilities, but if that's the case, doesn't she know Silence Will Fall and
well, exactly.
They lose her voice.
Maybe that's what it's all about, the death of opera or something, I don't know.
And it's come out a bit spoilerish, so you may want to
spoiler alert
then a little bit of what the Christmas special is going to be about, and it's apparently a twist on the classic Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I've heard something rumbling that's very Christmassy. Yeah, I mean, like, more than before, this is going to be a full-on Christmas thing.
With explosive Santa Clauses and robot.
Well, that's something new. Maybe there'd be robot Santa Clauses.
In the past, I don't know how you get more Christmassy than that, I suppose.
I don't know if you can top the killer Christmas tree,
yeah.
David Tennant's. That was debut. That was pretty impressive, I thought.
Some of the things going on for the Christmas special, and it's so weird to be in a sweltering July and talking about the Christmas. I think we say that every year.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do, definitely. It is bizarre.
We're without new episodes, so we're already eagerly anticipating some fresh material.
When they were shooting Vincent and the Doctor, there's a scene there where the TARDIS materialized in front of the museum, and where you see the posters burn off of the TARDIS. It was actually snowing during that scene, and when they were shooting that, and I commented that they should, you know, switch to the Christmas special now while they have real snow, so they don't have to, like, you know, get those soap chips that always look so fake, you know, in July. You know, just reschedule, do some manipulation of their scheduling and shoot the Christmas special while there's actually real snow.
Yeah, a little unpredictable, though. When you need it, it won't show up.
Yeah,
it'll be a balmy 59 degrees.
Exactly. Yeah,
and speaking from experience, shooting in the snow, not a lot of fun.
Well, they were doing it anyway. They were, but they had to make believe it wasn't snowing, and because it wasn't snowing in that episode.
But it is a bit light as it is mid-July, although San Diego Comic-Con is right around the corner.
Again? Wow.
And,
it's hard to believe a year's gone by already since the last one. But no Doctor Who this year, actually, because they're shooting, as we just said, the Christmas special. So,
Is there any kind of presence in Comic-Con? I mean, I haven't looked at the schedule, but
BBC America, I think, is going to be there. But
I mean, they could talk about maybe Torchwood or Sarah Jane or...
Well, I mean, I'm sure they'll be promoting Doctor Who, but it just doesn't seem likely that we'll get what we expected, you know, a Matt Smith, you know, appearing there.
Well, it doesn't seem likely, does it, given that they're filming the Christmas episode at the moment, so...
But that's what they always say.
You know, and I'm sure he's disappointed, too, because in one of his, those video interviews, those short little things that he did for BBC America, you know, that were recorded ages ago, back before the series began, he said that, you know, he'll see us at Comic-Con, so... I think he was planning on being there.
Well, he didn't say which one, though, but obviously SDCC's the biggest. But I think, obviously, Doctor Who stole the show last year when David Tennant appeared, and to a lesser extent, Torchwood as well, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they held off on Doctor Who, if I remember correctly from last year, wasn't it on Sunday? So they're... They have a weekend there. Maybe he was very impressed with California. He seemed to enjoy himself, so I don't think he'd have much arm himself. Twisting.
Yeah, he definitely enjoyed himself in Palm Springs. The pictures, but I forget the model's name that he was dating at the time.
Yes, he had a lovely lady on his arm as he went to a concert there in
Coachella.
So Comic-Con's around the corner. The BBC America will have a presence, but there's nothing slated Doctor Who-wise. Well, there's a few exclusives, some figures and some T-shirts and some things like that that will be available. I think Tony Lee is traveling there. I saw that on his
– He's been tweeting that.
For some reason, I'm thinking Paul Cornell as well, but I might be wrong about that.
The previous segment was recorded, obviously, prior to San Diego Comic-Con. We had Doctor Who Podshock correspondent Tara Wheeler there at San Diego Comic-Con. So here is Tara filing a live report from San Diego Comic-Con. Well, it was live at the time.
Howdy! This is TARDIS Tara reporting from San Diego Comic-Con. The official word is that there is not an official Doctor Who panel. However, there are a number of Doctor Who people here at San Diego Comic-Con, including Tony Lee, Paul Cornell, From Being Human, Russell Tovey. Let's see here. Anthony Stewart Head is here. And the wonderful, the charming, the fabulous John Levine is here. I am hearing that there is going to be an informal gathering of Who fans in the sales pavilion at 1 o'clock to take photos. But according to BBC and BBC America, there is no official Doctor Who program here at San Diego Comic-Con. So, reporting to you live from San Diego Comic-Con, this is TARDIS Tara. Out.
Thank you, Tara. Once again, Tara's on the spot there, on location at San Diego Comic-Con. Stay tuned for a follow-up report from Tara coming up later in this episode. And now back to our previously recorded conversation.
So there will be some folks there, Doctor Who related, not the splash that we had last year at this time. And we don't know, they may have something for Torchwood, being that, although BBC America hasn't announced anything.
Well, we didn't cover this yet.
Stars is planning anything.
Stars and BBC America.
That's what I was getting at, that we haven't really covered this yet because, we've been reviewing the new episodes that Stars, the cable channel in the U.S., have confirmed that they're picking up Torchwood.
A brand new series of Torchwood.
Well, it's a brand new, but it's going to continue. I mean, we're going to get John Barrowman and Eve Milo.
Miles, rather.
Yeah, Eve Miles was mentioning on her either Facebook or Twitter or one of the electronic means of communication that she was in the process of moving and it was difficult with a young baby and stuff. So we can look forward to seeing her back with John Barrowman.
Yeah, and I hear it's very global, this particular series that they're tackling. It's going to be all over the place. So,
yeah, so sounds it's not like be Cardiff it, yeah. base. It will be more international, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a clever move, really, because they've really raised the profile of the show, and start kicking it off in Cardiff was a great thing. And I'm sure that Russell knew precisely what he was doing when he claims, at least in all the interviews, that he didn't know whether it would be coming back and so on by blowing it up and so on. But, I'm sure he did, and I'm sure he had the plan that this is what he wanted to do.
I'm sure there's a potion available to bring it all back.
Indeed. It would seem so.
Well, I agree. Russell knows what he's doing. I loved Children of Earth.
Excellent, yeah.
Very good.
It's hard to believe that it's so long since that was on.
It was a year ago. It was July of last year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's a year anniversary just about now, I think. Right?
Yeah, well, one of the producers, Paul Silver, on the film I was working on out there, is a fan of Torchwood and hadn't yet seen it. So on a random day off, I was like, well, you got to come over and I'll go down to the shop and I'll pick it up and you got to watch it, at least watch the first one. And we popped it in, we watched the first one, and, once you break the seal. So 5 hours later, we had knocked it all out in one sitting. It was just glued.
Mm.
Great stuff, that Children of Earth. It's hard to top.
Indeed. It is very hard to top. Mm.
Well, it does kind of tie into you joining us, because on the movie that you were working on, Peter Capaldi, who was in Children of Earth as well as Fires of Pompeii, was in the movie that you just were involved in London. Did you have a chance to see him or chat
with him? Yeah, not in the aspect as it was scripted. We actually had a very big scene together, and which I prepared for it. And then, on the day, that scene just was dramatically shortened because we had to get more material. He plays a psychologist in our film, so they're giving deposition on camera, and I'm interviewing him. So we had to get all of that. And that was more important than the actual business that he and I interact with off of the film I'm in is a mockumentary, very much like Spinal Tap. Mm-hmm. And he's just one of the people that my character, I'm the director, I'm like the Rob Reiner of the film. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there, you have to make sure that my character, we at least get all the material while I'm interviewing everybody, because the film is broken up that way. And then any bits of business where my character kind of interacts with people outside of the documentary, you know, is not as important. But that being said, I was in it a lot, you know, beyond just interviewing people, and my character goes through an actual journey and what have you. But sometimes you just kind of lose the bits where you interact with other characters outside the documentary. So our scene together was dramatically shortened, but we did get to work together. And he had just won the BAFTA the night before for The Thick of It.
Which is where wow.
Nice.
Where he plays Malcolm, and that, which is an amazing show. And it was so... He was in good spirits, to say the least. And I'm sure Lewis is, for the Enhanced listeners, is streaming pictures as we speak, if you're listening. So you'll see a picture of Peter. So yeah,
this is, just to clarify this, because we kind of jumped over because Peter Capaldi was kind of joining it together. But mm-hmm. you, as you've been on the show before, people who have listened and heard your episodes know that you're usually an AD and working a lot behind the scenes. But this movie, you're actually an actor in. Which,
yeah,
is it your first time out as an actor?
Yes, yeah, in a starring role. Yeah, I've I've done a lot of films where I've kind of jumped into bit parts and make little cameos.
So you credited as man killed by axe?
Yeah, or like I was credited as a rapist once, or usually a thug, or
yeah. You misunderstood. It said therapist, not rapist.
Therapist, that's right. Therapist. But yeah, this is a completely different animal. This I went out there to work in obviously a smaller capacity on this film, and during the first week of pre-production, our co-star, we just had some scheduling conflicts, and we couldn't get all the days out of this actor we needed for the co-starring part, the guy who's shooting the documentary, the Rob Reiner character. I use Rob Reiner as the template because
to
the mockumentary. And
Marty DeBurgi, I think.
So he's still in the movie. Yeah, Marty DeBurgi. They said they want that DeBurgi element, so that's what I brought. So yeah, they ended up, that other actor is still in the film. He's a very, very funny comedian named Omid Jalili, and he's the Iranian comedian, and he's a very funny guy, but he's still in the movie playing a smaller part. Mm-hmm. And they gave me his role, which is I didn't see coming. So it was a very bizarre experience. They let me know 2 days before shooting that I had gotten that part. I'm co-starring in the film.
Yeah.
The funny thing about this is that you play, and this is a stretch, you play Josh mm-hmm. Friedman in the movie.
Yeah, they said, look, you're going to be the American filmmaker who's just reacting to all of this, and you're going to be a big Anglophile. And I'm like, a lot like me. They're like, well, you want to just keep your name? You want to just play yourself? I was like, sure. So, yeah, so I'm credited. I would say I'm half playing myself. I mean, there's a lot of scenes there that are scripted and what have you. And some emotional scenes. I actually have to break down into tears in one scene. So there.
Well, you're a colorful character, so it's not surprising that they would just say, just be yourself. Because,
but yeah, a lot of it was a react to the strange universe of English, the Cockney underworld and the gangland London. And,
all right, so the movie is called Bulla, the movie.
B-U-L-L-A, Bulla, yeah.
Movie. It will probably be out in 2011. It's just still in post-production, and there's probably some pickups and things for you guys to do.
Sure.
But the reason that it kind of ties in, and it's kind of fun to have you on the show, not only because we're just Lewis, James, and I and the whole Podshot crew are just ecstatic that you're getting a chance to play a part in a movie, and a big one of that, a big part.
Yeah.
But you work with Peter Capaldi, but that wasn't the only sort of Doctor Who crossover or British. I mean, tell me a little bit about the stars and some of the people you worked with.
Well, right off the bat, our first AD is Dan Mumford, who's one of the ADs from the current series. Yeah. And he started out as a third AD back in the first series. So he did all the entire Eccleston run. And then, you know, as an AD, they brought him in for a lot of the Tennant episodes. And then for Matt Smith, he brought in the Angels two-parter on his production blog.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So plenty of fun stories, huh?
So all the way up to the current series then?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wants to probably, I don't know how much more of Doctor Who he'll do. I think he's one of, he'll focus more on films. He's doing really well, and he's a great guy. And we ended up rooming together for most of it. I was living there on the Elstree lot where we shot a lot of our scenes and where our production was based. And Elstree is, you know, let's talk about sci-fi history. I mean,
yeah,
Star Wars and Flash Gordon and Superman and just film history in general. But So spent a lot of time with him, obviously, and great guy, wonderful AD, and I know ADs fairly well. And then, of course, we had Brian Croucher, who's in our movie, which really ties in to today's Robots of Death.
He was in Robots of Death, yeah, as well as being Travis in the second series of Blake 7.
Yeah, my ears really lit up. That's how it kind of came about. We were doing a scene together where he plays a... He's one of the rogue gallery of characters that we meet along this journey, and he's runs a seafood shack out right across from the Millennium Dome. And my character is brought to this where the gangsters that I'm following in this documentary like to kind of get their grub on, so to speak. And I am forced to eat, I would say, jellied eels. Now, jellied eels aren't very popular even in England. Am I mistaken there, James, or...?
They aren't universally enjoyed, it has to be said. It's a very Cockney East End of London thing.
Exactly.
It's not, yeah.
So my character, and he runs a shack where he's like, oh, you're going to love these. And the gangsters literally force feed me mouthfuls of these jelly deals. And that was a real deal, man.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. And, you know, only 11 different takes from different angles. So I would say a few mouthfuls. I mean, everyone in the crew and the cast are like, I wouldn't even do that. So they would never even eat one socially. I mean, they're just disgusting. It's just raw eel cut into slices, chilled in marrowbone jelly.
You are a fan of Robots of Death. It's one of the reasons we putting you together with this. And of course, it all comes together with being with Brian Croucher. But did he know that you're a fan of Doctor Who? Or?
No, in fact, and I didn't recognize him, obviously. I mean, I remember his character very well, but I just wasn't putting it together.
He wasn't wearing an eye patch?
Now here's something I was going to bring up on the show now, and I hate to be a bad British sci-fi fan. I've never gotten around to the Blake 7 thing, and now Ken knows this. I've never watched Blake 7.
You're on Ken's... bleep list.
Yeah, the watch list.
Well, that's not true because now I found out by impetus of this, and Ken, I'm going public with this, buddy. by impetus of that, I found out that Ken's never watched or gotten into Red Dwarf.
Which
I think is, you know, litany. I mean, I love Red Dwarf as much as I love Doctor Who. So Ken and I have a deal, and listeners, please write in. And
do I sense a Doctor Who Podshock challenge coming ahead?
It's a challenge. Ken, I will watch all of the Blake Sevens. All of them from beginning to end, and then decide whether I'm a fan or not. And I want Ken to do the same for Red Dwarf. And listeners, what do you think? Who are we going to love it or are we going to hate it? So let us know. I want that to happen this year, buddy. I'm going to watch all of Blake 7 this year. So back to Brian Croucher, though. I'm sorry.
I'll have you both on Hitchhiker's Guide to British Sci-Fi to get the results of that.
Do that. That'll be great. When I was working with him, he kept mentioning, and he was obviously had been around the block. He's a very funny guy. And then at one point he mentioned, I've been doing this, you know, I've been in the industry for, you know, 40 years or some odd. I'm like, wow, it's been around the block. And then at one point when he mentioned this, and I did some Blake 7, because of my friendship with Ken, I'm like, well, my ears lit up. I'm like, oh, really? Well, what did you play? I love sci-fi, but I haven't gotten around to Blake 7 yet. So he went off about Commander Travis, is it? Is it Captain Travis? He was going off about that. And then under his breath, he was like, oh, and I did a little Doctor Who. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Excuse me? What do you mean a little? Oh, I did this episode of Robots of Death. Now, at that point, my knees got a little weak. I'm like, what do you mean? You done Robots of Death? Well, I played Borg, and then, like, the face, everything just clicked.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, I was like, oh, my God. And then I had a little bit of a starstruck moment. And I'm like that with British actors, because, I mean, I deal with a lot of celebrities out here, and with both the Playboy gig and working on film. And I'm kind of I don't really get starstruck anymore, but, you know, break out a obscure Doctor Who British actor or anyone from any of the British shows I enjoy, I do get starstruck. And so that changed the dynamic very, very quickly.
And I'm sure he probably doesn't look exactly the same. It's been 33 years.
No, I'm sure we're looking at pictures as this is streaming now, so you'll see what I'm talking about. And yeah, it was great. And then it was to do a scene with him and then talk more about that. That was a lot of fun. And I mentioned the show, so don't be surprised if you guys won't be talking to him yourself soon.
Oh, we'll have him on the show. We'll interview him on how he felt about meeting Joshua Lou Friedman.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, the funny thing happened. You were doing this movie, and you ran into Joshua Lou Friedman. What was that like?
No. You want to ask him about where he's, like, strangling Tom Baker in the sandbinder on Robots. Mm. Any of your Blake 7 questions. But it was great to work with him. He was a lot of fun, and we did share a very funny scene together. So.
I'm sure he'll be saying, oh, that Joshua Lou Friedman, he was playing this part. He had no experience playing. Where did he come off playing this character named Josh Friedman?
Exactly. That happened.
Yeah, who does he think he is? Yes.
By the end
Josh,
of the day,
it's the part you were born to play, literally.
Evidently, yeah. So a lot of fun, yeah.
Were there other Doctor Who related actors or anything like that?
I want to say, well, from other, not really Doctor Who, but obviously from other British shows. Like, you know, we had EastEnders stars. We had Derek Acora playing himself. He's a very big medium out there. Ricky Grover from Red Dwarf and Black Books. Layla Morris from EastEnders is an amazing lady. She's Gary Oldman's sister, actually. Stephen Burkoff, you might remember as the villain from Beverly Hills Cop. Sure. He was a Bond villain. He was a Bond villain from Octopussy.
From Octopussy, yeah.
And Rambo's villain, if I'm not mistaken, as well. And Clockwork Orange.
West is decadent and weak.
Yeah.
He was awesome in that movie.
His performance in Octopussy. And he was, yeah, very bizarre to work with a Bond villain and, you know, sharing scenes with him and whatnot. And, you know, you'll just have to IMDb it and then check everyone else's credits. Obviously, they're all been in great shows that I've never even heard of. And I'm an Anglophile. Like, what, James, help me. What's the bill? Is the bill considered like a NYPD Blue would be out here? Or?
Well, it's a police drama, but it's sort of like a cross between a soap opera and a police drama. So kind of like that, but obviously not as glamorous or Hollywood style. It's a very, very old, long-running series, which I think they just recently cancelled, actually, after almost 40-odd years on television. Yeah. So which is a real shame, and I know a lot of people were disappointed about it, but apparently that's the way it goes with reality-driven television these days, particularly ITV, the network that the bill was on. So a real shame. But, yeah, long-standing classic piece of British television.
And, yeah, when I was staying at the Elstree lot, my apartment was next door to the Big Brother house for their final season, because that's finally being cancelled as well.
Yes, finally, after 10 years.
Yeah, noisy neighbors. I'm going to tell you, I was there for the whole auditioning and first nights and evictions, and it was a little crazy. It's weird staying on the Elstree lot, like being next to the Big Brother house, and then, you know, the car from Kick-Ass is parked outside my apartment door.
He was saying it's
red mist car. Yeah, a lot of crazy and Star Wars stuff everywhere. We had a Han Solo encased in carbonite in our production office. It's actually one of the ones they used in Empire.
He's alive and in perfect carbonation.
Exactly. It's a lot of Star Wars stuff around the George Lucas soundstage over there. Very.
I saw a picture of you with the crystal from Superman as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to tour the effects shops, and all the history is there. Like, stuff from Raiders of the Lost Ark is still there. The crystal from the Superman movie, that builds his fortress. It's a lot of Star Wars stuff. The lightsaber. What is that little ball that flies around and you train?
The remote.
It's called the remote.
Yeah.
Is it really called the remote? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all there. You got to play with all that. And then some things I wasn't allowed to take pictures of.
I get to play with it. I picture him playing toss with it.
Toss, exactly. Not much you can do with it. Like bounce it against the wall or something. No.
Stretch out.
There were some things of interest that I wasn't allowed to take pictures of, but I can talk about it. They were putting together the John Carter of Mars film, the effects for that.
Okay.
So they had the maquettes up of all the Martians, which I thought looked really cool. And then they were doing work on that horror film, Human Centipede, the sequel. And It's a very big, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Human Centipede, but it's a horror film of note in that community. And now they're doing the sequel, which, I can't talk about it, but some of the things I saw what they're working on are pretty interesting. So, stuff like that.
Now, you're being a Podshock correspondent,
sure,
as well as being a Doctor Who fan and a long time, galley for 20 plus years. And so you've met just about everybody over the years and know them. When you went over, did you have a chance to see anybody, any British friends?
Oh yeah.
We talked about this off the air. I've never been to England and neither has Lewis and up until this trip, neither of you.
James, strangely enough.
It's like a trip to Mecca for Doctor Who fans or Anglophiles. So you had to have made a phone call. Like, who was the first guy you called when you knew that you were going to go?
Well, I made a series of phone calls, like right off the bat. You know, I'm friends with, Sylvester McCoy and Fraser Hines and Toby Hadok. I still can't pronounce his last name, Hadoki. Simon Gurrier, the writer. So I let them all know I was, in town. And definitely had fun. Oh, and David J. Howe and Sam Stone, of course.
Of course.
Of course. And so, that was pretty much what I did my last week there. I mean, we shot my entire time I was shooting. I was working every day and never had, I'm in every scene. So I didn't really have any days off. So all my traveling and seeing friends and what have you happened the last week while I was there. And James and I tried to squeeze some time in together, but it was just so hectic, my schedule that last week. And I know, James, you had stuff going on.
Exactly.
We unfortunately couldn't connect, but we did make the attempt.
We did, yes.
Right off the bat, after the film was shot, I immediately took a Virgin train up to Wales to stay with David J. Howe and Sam Stone, who are, good friends. And you need them on the show, trust me. They are amazing. And David J. Howe's history, we all know him as, Telos Publishing and what have you, and writing all the books he has. But remember the toy box thing. He's the man when it comes to Doctor Who merchandise. All I can say is being in his home is just like, if you're a Doctor Who fan, there is not a single thing with the words Doctor Who labeled on it that he doesn't own. And it is in his private collection. As far as private collections are concerned, I can't even begin to go through it. Like, you'll go through a room and, for instance, I'm like, wow, that looks a lot like the wooden horse from the Mythmakers. He's like, well, that's because it is. So he has actual trinkets from the show, costumes. There was a Formosi, one of the actual ones used in the series, there in his play. The pinball machine I knew about, that's there. I didn't know there was a slot machine for Doctor Who.
There's a Doctor Who slot machine?
Oh, yeah. He was playing. It's filled with pounds. You can actually win money from it, And it was incredible.
Can I buy that for Mercy?
Oh my God! There's so much.
Is it shaped like the TARDIS console, and the handle is like when you open the TARDIS doors?
You're probably streaming a picture of it right now for everybody. I've got all that to you. So
he's not going to be mad that you're like.
No. There's some things he specifically told me. Hey, this. His collection is very vast.
It's like the Lost Ark. You open it up,
It is. It's like, as a Doctor Who fan, you feel like you've died and gone to heaven. So
wow.
And no, but that being said, that being said, Sam, it was lovely. And we got into a convertible one day and she toured me Wales. We even, which was amazing. We even went up to where they shot, this is how far out there we were, the Abominable Snowman with the Yetis. And you'll see here on these pictures, the landscapes, you're like, oh my God, you're almost waiting for a Yeti to pop
to come
from
to
around come a rock
cruising and over the hill.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. And everything we saw just touring all of Wales was, the countryside was amazing, and going up to castles and what have you. So, and that was all great. In fact, there's one bit, this is kind of funny. they're taking me to I forget the name of the beach town, but there was a we're going out to this lighthouse, and I love old lighthouses. And as we were walking into the lighthouse, it looked like there was someone standing on the, you know, on the rim on top on the landing with the lights shining. And the closer we got to it, we were like, look, I know we're both Doctor Who fans, but that looks a lot like a Cyberman sitting on top of this lighthouse. And the closer we got, yeah, it was an actual it was freaky because we thought there was just someone up there. Turns out there was there is a sculpture of not a Cyberman, but like a silver metal man up there. And
was he like watching for Rutans?
Yeah, that's what I said when we were walking up. I thought that was funny. So yeah, when we walked up to this thing, I mean, we thought, oh, we're just like, you know, that's just the Doctor Who geeks in us as we were walking up to this thing. But no, when we got up there, there was literally like this metallic silver man perched up there to, I don't know, scare off pigeons.
To ward off evil spirits.
But it's very creepy. And if you're looking at the pictures of Lewis, you'll see what I'm talking about. So
he's waiting for the scarecrow and...
Exactly.
Well, so then it reminds me last summer I went to the Fire Island Lighthouse and took some pictures there, and I found this metal thing out, you know, in the brushes in the like the woodland going to the lighthouse, and that looked like something out of the Suntaran experiment. It looked like one of those
sphere.
Well, no, it wasn't a sphere, but that robot that Suntaran.
Oh God, yeah.
It looked like something like that.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to find out there. And then that was just whales, and they were wonderful, Sam and Dave. I can't thank them enough. And then coming back into town, I agreed to get together with Toby, you know, Haddock, thank you. And I agreed to get together with him to meet him in a pub. And I also had mentioned to Simon Gurrier that I'd be around. So Toby's like, well, listen, I'll call Simon and we'll all meet at this pub together in London. So we did, and I was surprised to find out when I got there they had also invited Nicola Bryant and Nev Fountain.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, so, and then we all just had a table, and we were there. It was a good night of fun and food and drinking and exchanging stories, and Nicola was amazing, and they were all very kind of, you know, excited about the story of what's happened to me, you know, by starring in this film. It's coming to London my first time, and then having this role end into my, you know, so it gave us a lot to talk about, you know, about the craft and what have you and what to do with this now that that's happened. So it was a great night with Nicola and Nev Fountain, amazing guy, Simon Gurrier. Oh, and then of course from Tachyon TV, Simon Harries was there with us as well. And, mm-hmm. and he's a great guy. It was a wonderful, wonderful evening. So, and if that wasn't enough, the next day I had to get up because I promised Sylvester McCoy I'd visit his home.
Yeah, that's just a funny way of putting it. Sorry.
It was very strange, yeah. So Sylvester, I went over to Sylvester's place to watch the World Cup. It was, you know, World Cup fever. And Sylvester's son Joe is Dutch, so it was a Holland-Brazil game. So he had me over for that and cooked a very nice lunch. And I went over there with, my friend Johnny, who was nice to drive me around a lot and hang out with.
Yeah, Johnny I met in L.A.
I met through L.A., and the only reason why is because he's a Podchalk listener. He's a big fan of the show. Johnny Capalonga. I know you're out there.
We met him at Gallifrey.
He's wonderful. And he was just, you know, we hung out. We got together. The guy's like a brother to me now. And
he was at our meetup.
He's a fantastic guy.
He was just a big fan of Podchalk, and that's how we all met up through this show. So it was great. I took him with me and Sylvester's and to that night out with Nicola and everything. So, you know, a lot of fun there. And then, hanging out with Sylvester at his place was great. Just watching the game and, you know, having this wonderful lunch he had prepared and seeing the house. And Holland won Brazil. And so it was very, and that's what we were pulling for, that we didn't expect that to happen. And it did. So that was a lot of fun.
Gee, if I knew we were going to be talking about the World Cup, I would have got my Vuvuzela, or whatever it's called.
Vuvuzela, the Vuvuzelas, yeah. It's
I had one here. I never knew what it was called until this year, but I had one for years.
How did you come up with that, Lewis?
It was my brother's, and
I don't even want to know where he came up with it.
Yeah, and then finally, end of the trip, one more person, though.
Okay.
The end of the trip, you know, I'd promised Fraser we'd get together, so Fraser and I finally... He came down to Elstree, and we went out to lunch, and we got to catch up. And the funny thing about that meeting was that in town, in this little town of Bournemouth, which is where Elstree Studios is kind of situated, I did come across an actual Doctor Who shop in this really small town. It's that website, SciFiCollectorUK.com. That's their headquarters in this little shop in the middle of this little town with a Doctor Who store. So obviously that's where, you know, I made friends with the owners and I was going to, you know, hang out there on a day off or two at a I don't know, shop and meet the
stimulate
owners.
Stimulate the economy.
Stimulate the economy. Yeah, that's where I got that torch when I show my friend. Anyway, so when Fraser and I went out to lunch, we were like, oh, wait a minute. I'd forgotten. They're like, we're passing by the shop. I'm like, hey, why don't we go in and like kind of buzz them? Let's just walk in and see what happens. You know, it was great. You know, and if you're running a little a Doctor Who store in a small town, you know, the last thing you expect is like, you know, Fraser Hines to come just dropping in.
That's awesome.
Where they're selling copy of his book and signed copy of his book. So he was really happy. And we took some pictures with them, and that was great. So that was a lot of fun to do that for them as well. So it was all amazing. It was a great trip. Great trip. And a strange experience.
A question on the movie, on Bull of the movie, Toby, does Toby know, because they're comedians, does Toby know Ricky?
Yeah, everyone at the table knew of Ricky Grover and his background. Ricky used to write for the 11 o'clock show. That's where the character Bola stems from. And, you know, he used to write with Sacha Baron Cohen and Ricky Gervais, who have gone on from the 11 o'clock show to kind of do their characters that made a splash.
Made them famous, yeah.
Made them famous. And now it's Ricky's turn. This is it. Mm. So, that's kind of how this is being looked at, and that's why we got all the support and the, you know, financially and, you know, kind of within the industry that we needed to make this happen. It's, you know, it's a, I mean, speaking from someone who's worked on, it's a funny script. It's good stuff. And no thanks by my part. And I mean, it was all great before I was offered this, but it's very, very funny. And I'm hoping by impetus of the fact that my character's in it and it's told, you know, kind of through my eyes or my experience, the journey I take that he takes me on, that'll open it up to the American market and might be more than just a, you know, this British film that did really well. I'm hoping it'll be something that, you know, we'll see though. I mean, you can never predict.
Spring or summer of 2011 for something like
that? Yeah, these things usually take about a year. I mean, my outside guest, I would look out for it in England or in a year. So we'll see. I'll keep you guys posted, of course.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. And I mean, we're excited because it's just great that, you know, this is always it's nice because it's like inspirational for Doctor Who fans. So we all think of ourselves as like the people who get together at meetings on a Sunday and hunker down and watch, you know, Androids of Tara. Mm. But it's inspired people to go out and join, be in the business or be creative. And in almost any aspect, you see people who are painters or artists in different capacities. Some people do music, some people acting, some people are involved either writing or working as in production.
Sure.
And so anytime you can highlight that, to me, it's always fantastic. And for no other reason, it's just, you know, I'd like Podchuck to take all the credit for it, Josh.
You guys can.
It happened since you joined the show.
You guys can. I did mention Podchuck everywhere I was going. Well, yeah, I did.
Well,
yeah.
You know, it's fantastic. And you know, we're here to talk about Doctor Who, so we'll bring
let's ship into robots, yeah.
To Robots of Death, because this, I mean.
But why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back with our review of Robots of Death.
He's making us stop.
Oh, good.
Make it stop.
Hi, my name's Louise Jameson. I played Leela way back in the day, and I'm listening to the Podshock. Hurrah!
Good news, everyone. The randomizer has selected a Podshock supporting subscriber to receive the second signed copy of the recently released book, The Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who. You may recall last month when we announced that Robert Greenwood was randomly chosen to receive the first of two copies of this book. It was in honor of the 25th anniversary of the Gallifreyan Embassy at that time. And now for the 5th anniversary of Doctor Who Podshock, Robin Dalpuzzo McVeigh has been randomly selected from current Podshock supporting subscribers to receive the other signed edition. It is signed by the authors and editors Anthony S. Burge, Jessica Burke, Christine Larson, and Melody Green. They signed the copies, which they had donated the night of the book event at Fiddlesticks in Manhattan, New York, where, if you recall, we performed a live show of Doctor Who Podshock back in May of this year. So congratulations to Robin who is in the UK, which is quite fitting, being that this episode of Doctor Who Podshock is very UK-centric. We will ship his copy across the pond as soon as we can. It is just one way we like to show our appreciation to those that enable us to continue doing this show. We only had 2 signed copies of this book to give away, but there will be other opportunities in the near future to be selected by the randomizer to receive a gift of appreciation. But you have to be a Podshock supporting subscriber. Remember, for a low monthly subscription fee, as a show of support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow this show, but you get extra content as well. The Doctor Who Podshock Extra Editions. To become a Podshock supporting subscriber, simply go to thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net or arttrap.com and click on the top banner to become a Podshock supporting subscriber. If you're already a Podshock supporting subscriber, thank you for your continued support. It does make a difference.
Oh, so we've caught one. Not soon enough, though.
I didn't kill him. Ask this thing.
You'll have to do better than that. Who are you?
Leela, who are you?
Why did you kill him?
You try that again and I'll cripple you.
Why did you kill him?
I didn't! Tell him!
That is a single-function labor robot. D class. D for dumb. It can't speak.
Has anyone told him that?
You have cost me and the company a great deal of money and you have killed 3 people. Can you think of any good reason why I should not have you executed on the spot?
No, but you can, otherwise you'd have done it.
Now don't get clever with me!
Oh, we've caught the man, too. Seems he killed Carol. Poor Cass. You must be stronger than you look.
You must be stupider than you look if you think I did that.
Where is this man?
They're taking him to the crew room now.
Well, come on, then.
Why do you use these? Robot deactivation discs. There was one on Carol, too.
You fool. What did you have to tell her that for?
I assume she knew.
If we could have got her to tell her what those corpse markers were, we'd be halfway to a confession.
Halfway to 2 confessions. Dask knew what they were.
Which rather rules him out. He would hardly have admitted it if he was responsible.
Have you never heard of the double bluff?
You seem very keen to spread suspicion, Poole. Could it be that you have got something to hide?
We've all got something to hide. Don't you think so, Commander?
Bring that!
I didn't kill him! I didn't kill him!
Pity. But no.
And we're back with Doctor Who Podshock, and we're speaking with Joshua Lou Friedman, and I'm here obviously with my 2 co-hosts, Ken and James, and we're talking, well, we're going to be reviewing right now Robots of Death, a Tom Baker story written by Chris Boucher. And didn't he do some writing for Blake 7 as well?
He did, yeah. Actually, this is a great example of there being a crossover. This is the one episode that kind of links the 2 shows together.
It has a very much style of Blake 7. If you're familiar with Blake 7 episodes, this has a very much a feel of Blake 7, at least I thought. It's directed by Michael E. Bryant and produced under the Philip Hinchcliffe era. And it went out in January through February of 1977. So this predates Star Wars. And so you really got to put yourself.
And Blake 7.
And Blake 7, of course. And you put yourself in that mindset. And, well, let's talk about it.
Yeah. In addition to having Brian Croucher from Blake 7 in it, Pamela Salem. Is one of the co-stars and Russell Hunter.
Hunter, yeah, from
in it as well. So I mean, you have the supporting cast is ridiculous. On top of the regular cast being Louise Jameson, Tom Baker. You know, it's the one of the legendary combinations in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and this is the first one out for Leela after the Face of Evil, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and she's still kind of warming up to the TARDIS. She's doing the whole yo-yo thing, mm-hmm. which is it's just. brilliant.
How about the writing on the bit when you bring that bit up? How about the writing on how he explains the TARDIS to her?
Baffling.
That was genius. Yeah.
What's great is she just says that doesn't make sense. Of course it doesn't.
That's silly or something. She says something like that. That's silly.
Yeah.
That's transcendental dynamics or whatever the engineering or something. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
And it's the 14th season TARDIS console room. So it's that whole wood grain jewels room.
It's the last appearance. Yeah.
Is it the last appearance? Yeah.
Doctor? Can I stop now?
If you want to.
It will not affect this.
Affect this? Oh, it's a yo-yo. It's a game. I thought you were enjoying it.
Enjoying it? You said I had to keep it going up and down. I thought it was part of the magic.
Magic, Lila? Magic?
I know. There's no such thing as magic.
Exactly. To the rational mind, nothing is inexplicable, only unexplained.
So, explain to me how this TARDIS is larger on the inside than the out.
All right, I'll show you. It's because insides and outsides are not in the same dimension. Which box is larger?
That one.
Now, which is larger?
That one.
But it looks smaller.
Well, that's because it's further away.
Exactly. If you could keep that exactly that distance away and have it here, the large one would fit inside a small one.
That's silly.
That's transdimensional engineering, a key Time Lord discovery. This is the exciting bit.
What's exciting?
Well, I've seen what's outside. I don't know. It's metal. We've landed inside something metal.
But how can we? How can the TARDIS be inside something metal?
Oh, one box inside another. I just explained it to you.
No, not very clearly.
Well, it's a rather dull subject.
Also, it was the first DVD to be released, at least out here, for the Tom Baker era.
Was it the first? It's obviously a very early one.
No, it was 11 years ago. They released... when they are finally releasing Doctor Who on DVD, Robots.
And we're still not finished with releasing them all on DVD yet.
Six or seven more, yeah.
And it's probably safe to say that this will be one of the ones on deck for a reissue with a more deluxe transfer.
Yes, there's no production op. Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't really have much when it comes to extras. And now with To Entertain, they really do, they go a little bit more overboard with putting together, you know, behind the scenes extras.
And going back and getting the ones they were kind of skimpy, they chintzed on, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So
it's so funny because right before we started recording, James, you know, before we actually log on microphone wise, we have a little chat room open, and James says, I watched it. He was just ecstatic to it was just an excuse to watch this, and I don't think anybody regrets it.
No, certainly not. And I've forgotten actually how good it was. It's astounding. It's funny that you watch a DVD, you know, maybe once every 5 years or so, and every time that I, because you've got so many great episodes of Doctor Who to choose from, and you know, it really depends on your mood. And I hadn't really watched this in a long, long time, so it was great to revisit it and remind myself of just what a terrific series of episodes it is. And it's amazing that they managed to squeeze it all into four episodes. It's, you know,
oh, the pacing's fantastic in this.
Yeah,
and probably the most notable thing is the production design, how keep it timeless by not making the robots, I mean, doing an Art Deco thing with the set design. And
that was a Ken Sharp. Ken Sharp did all that work.
Yeah,
it's just an
incredible art direction. And then you put a crackling script and a cast that's selling it. And that's really key. I mean, every actor in there is buying into it, including the robots. Because I can imagine that if you're an actor and you're getting a part, at some point you say, okay, you're going to wear this Japanese style robot costume and you have to go and do these lines, that some people might be like, what the hell is going on here? And no, the actors, the cast sell it the whole way through.
Yeah, they're creepy too. I mean, those robots still they hold up. Yeah. You know, another thing what makes this great is, and this is, you know, what you can say about the whole Hinchcliffe, Bob Holmes era of Doctor Who is that, you know, the strength in these is that these are basically, it's not so much a sci-fi element. They're murder mysteries.
Yes.
In space.
And that's basically what the core of it, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And this is very much Murder on the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at it that way. And that's another thing that this episode, again, is just a classic example of that.
Yeah, it's definitely a nod to Agatha Christie and a murder mysteries with a mix of Dune. He was mm-hmm. a sand miner and
well, Hinchcliffe has gone on record and said he was definitely inspired by both Dune and Asimov's, you know, Law of Robotics, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so, all that stuff is, those elements are all in this.
They're there.
In this story, and it all blends together very well. We sometimes, when we're watching a current episode of Doctor Who, some people could be like, oh, that episode reminds me of this movie or this thing or this old episode. And here's an episode that tips its cap to the things that we just mentioned. And everyone just goes, oh, yeah, of course. It's a great blend of all these wonderful things. And I wonder if there's a double standard that the current show is held to, where suddenly if they tip their cap, if we saw in a Matt Smith episode a sand miner or some kind of murder mystery in space or something like that, that we would be like, oh no, that's Robots of Death.
Well, they've done it. They did it with the Beast Below, you know, and it's just a matter of how you do it. And, you know, if it becomes a nod, or does it become, oh, well, they're just completely redoing just it or ripping this other piece of work off. But I like the Beast Below. I thought they did a good job balancing. They paid tributes to a lot of past work, everything from, you know, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back to, you know, other works that we've seen before. And but I think it still holds up on its own as well.
Yeah, great characters. I think it's also notable that the crew themselves are at each other's throats before we even meet the adversary or the doctor.
What's interesting is that this, as I said, came out in 1977. This predates Alien, which you have a crew that's hauling ore and, you know, fighting off. It's sort of a murder mystery, except for it was an alien. Yeah. So it's interesting how this has some parallels to Alien, even though it predates Alien. But what's really interesting is that here we have the workers are very, they're very costumed. They look like royalty in a sense, more so, or they're in a fancy luxury liner than a working dirty miner. I mean, obviously the robots are there to do the dirty work, and I think maybe this is exemplifying the class system. And
yeah,
it's interesting.
Very much so. Yeah, Elizabeth Waller's costume designs are like, it's, you know, they're ornate, they're elaborate, but, you know, again, you're right, it sells the background of these characters and why these characters are out there, you know, to kind of maintain that structure of their class system. And the class system definitely, you know, weighs into this heavily with, like, say, Yuvanov's, you know, prejudice toward people who aren't, you know, part of the royal family, so to speak, like the Zilda character. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the comments about making money, and we'll have more money than
your family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And from a technobabble point of view, a lot of the descriptions as to what they're doing make sense. Sort of saying where these scoops are catching this and they're sifting out the ore, and then there's a pilot,
ruffle everything up and bring stuff to the surface, and
there's a pilot and what they're doing, and each crew member has something to do, and again, this is part of selling it. Part of what makes it really work is that it becomes believable if each person has a responsibility. And although there's an explanation as to why the robots aren't doing it, that they don't have instincts and all this kind of stuff, all those things are in the story, and that's what sells it and makes it work.
Totally.
On top of that, on top of the selling of the story through this dialogue, we talked a little bit about a crossover. Calder City is mentioned, and that's also Boucher includes certain references in Blake 7 to certain things in this story, as well as a spin-off of audios. They did an entire series of audios called Calder City.
Yeah. He sequelized the episode itself in a book first, in the book Corpse Marker.
Corpse Marker, yeah.
And I believe the character, I think you told me it was Carnahan, or there was a character from Blake 7, a minor character.
He is a minor character in the second series.
So when they did the Calamar series audios, it spawned from that. So there's plenty of... I have them, but I haven't heard them yet. So I'm a bad Robots of Death fan. But I am looking forward to kind of, you know, I'm just actually reading Corpse Parker as we speak. So once I'm done with that, I'm going to drink deeply from
that. And that's not new, right? That's in the late 90s, Corpse
Parker. Yeah, and I'm just now getting to it. Like I said, I'm a bad Robots of Death fan. Time, you know, whenever I get to it, when I can, no matter, better later than never.
Well, that's the thing about the audios and the books and the things that we have as Doctor Who fans, they're there for your taking. I mean, there's some people who obsess over having to check everything out the first day it's out. I'm a person that gets around to it when I get around to it.
I do too. And the market's so saturated now, so you'll know you'll always have that to get around to, you know? So.
I mean, if you're,
but I do.
You have a whole line of things attached to the current show, followed by Big Finish on the classics and things like that. You have a line of comics, and then you have a line of books. And there's plenty to get your fill if you want to have that every single day. And my taking is I take it when I have some time to it. And we're talking about Robots of Death, so perhaps this is a perfect excuse for me to go listen to Calendar City this week, and we'll see what happens.
Well, on a technical note, I think they did a great job with this episode. You have to put yourself in the mind that this was came out early 1977, so this was made in late 76. I'm imagining it. I don't remember the actual shooting schedule for it. You know, now looking at it on a big screen, and if you have an HDTVD, you know, it blown. You know, you can criticize it, but you have to put yourself in that mindset. Also, the lighting and the use of shadows were very good in this. I mean, that with the limitations of that day, they're shooting on video, and
in a studio,
it was blown out in certain areas, which they couldn't control because of the cameras. But I think they did a very good job creating a whole mood for this murder mystery, you know, where it could have been ruined if the lighting was wrong.
Yeah, it's very moody. It is very creepy. In fact, I think the VHS release was originally edited for some violence. And it does have some bits. I can see them maybe editing out. You know, when they find the blood on the robot's, the disabled robot's hand, that's not just blood. That's like meat. it's pretty grotesque stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's not just that's frightening about it. I mean, the best way to frighten your audience is to show a character that you identify with being terrorized and hurt watching that person being scared. And the bit where they attempt to murder Pamela Salem's character.
She gives a
strangled and screaming for her life.
Blood-curdling scream that just sells it.
It sells it. That's how you frighten an audience. I think Hitchcock said that. You frighten an audience by showing someone terrified and that you relate to. Mm-hmm. And I think that worked here.
Yeah. Well, the classic Psycho scene with the shower.
Of course. Well, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Speaking of the hands, there's a humorous line there with was it D8 that that black robot? He said, "Please stop throwing hands at me," or something like that. When
please do not strike me.
Do not throw hands at me. The wit in the story is top notch, and if for those of you with Paul Cornell, Martin Day and Keith Topping, there's three authors, book The Discontinuity Guide. There's a in their quote section, their reaction to one of the quotes in the movie is just priceless. I won't ruin it in case you have the book, or if you don't have the book, it's a perfect excuse to go check it out. Their witty, their pithy comment on these lines is just priceless. I mean, it was worth the price of the book.
I have to
spill one. Come on, you can give one out.
No, I can't possibly. I'll save it. I'm you know.
All right. Well, now I got to go out and buy the book.
I may have mentioned it on an older show, so you have to go back. There's only 214 in before this.
All right. Of course. No worries. I'll be right back.
Please do not throw hands at me. She will recover.
What happened to her? It's all right. He's a friend. It's all right.
She was being attacked. The doctor sent me to her assistance.
Well, where is he then? Where's the robot?
It received a priority call to go to Section J. I heard the instruction on my command circuit.
The doctor said
Everyone took control there. Kamria left.
Well, as far as I know, only Paul and his mind is broken. I haven't seen Yuvan or Ford Dask.
Where is Chief Mover Paul?
I left him in the storage bank.
I had better bring him to the control deck.
Do you think you can make it?
It isn't far.
So there's a lot to be appreciated. I think this is, if this is the first of an ongoing series of DVDs of the classic show that we're recommending to people who have come to the show, come to Doctor Who over the last 5 years, this is a pretty worthy example of classic Doctor Who. Would we all agree?
Well, very much. Yeah. And also, even though it's, as I said, it's 33 years old now, it's still relevant today because, I mean, they touch upon robophobia, and I know that sounds like something that you might hear from Futurama or something like that, but it's actually something real in today's world because they're developing robots now, and they've done studies with humans on how, when they're developing a robot, because now we're using technology more and more, and robot engineers are now developing robots. They want to create a human-like face to them, but to a certain degree, it's interesting because we're more and more attracted the more we can relate and anamorphosize these, non-living things to make them, you know, like C-3PO, whatever. That's fine, but once it gets to the point where you put human skin on it and it gets creepy and then people start repelling from that. And it's interesting because one of the characters here, you know, suffers from robophobia, and it's something that, you know, sounds like science fiction, but it's actually reality because it's today, in today's world, if you look at some of the Japanese, what the Japanese are doing with robot technology, and some of them are pushing them so they're so lifelike and so human-like that it is creepy. And if you see it, it does kind of creep you out a bit. But when it's more cartoonish, it's more inviting when it's human like but not crossing that. It's like a bell curve. You like it, and then it gets to a certain point, then no, now it's too human like and it's too creepy.
I'm telling you, they're watching lighthouses in Wales. I've seen it. That's where they're putting them. No, and it's funny you mentioned the robophobia. Do you remember the Grimwald syndrome that they mentioned?
Yeah.
With robophobia, they used he was just a production manager at the time, Peter Grimwald. Went on to obviously direct and write and direct episodes.
Sure. Ah, right.
They mentioned that robophobia is also a side effect of Grimwade syndrome, mm-hmm. and that was an odd to him.
Well, it's also interesting because the day that this came out back in the mid-70s was when a lot of people were losing jobs because robots were coming into the workplace and taking jobs out, and there was a bit of a workforce upheaval with people feeling that they're losing jobs to technology.
Not anymore. We're quite safe now.
Safe, safe.
Well, we'll have to send up a satellite distress beacon to get back to base, but there's no trouble.
Ivanov, you remind me very strongly of a lady called Marie Antoinette. There's a robot revolution going on out there, and you say we've got no problems.
Doctor, every single robot has been switched off. There's not one of them working.
Ivanov! Look over there.
I don't understand.
Shut the door, Toos. I may not have time to explain. There's a new generation of killer robots about, Ivanov. The killers are controlled by Tarel Capel, and D-84 is controlled by Poole. These two are undercover agents for the company.
Poole is damaged. I do not understand what has happened to him. This may be because I am not human.
Yes, that's very likely.
How did you find out about Poole?
Well, his body language was all wrong.
What's body language?
Well, it's the theory that a person expresses himself in the way he moves.
You said he was a hunter?
Yes, you did. Do you know what's wrong with Poole? Ivanov?
Yes. Robophobia.
That's right. The lawyer, you'd call it Grimwald syndrome.
I have seen it, Doctor. Once before. My very first command. Young kid. Just ran outside the mine. I tried to save him. I couldn't. I'll never, ever forget the look on his face.
Zilda's brother.
His father, of course, had it all hushed up. He was afraid his son would be thought a coward. But
Robophobia is a mental thing, right?
Oh, yes, yes, it is, until one gets its hands around your neck. I don't suppose there are any weapons aboard this mine?
They aren't necessary.
They are now.
This is SV-7. We know you are all on the control deck. You have 5 minutes to surrender. If you do not come out, you will be destroyed.
And if we give ourselves up, we'll be destroyed anyway. Is that what you're saying, Seven?
Humans feel pain. Our controller orders that you will die slowly if you do not surrender. You have, I repeat, 5 minutes.
Yeah, they even allude in the story to what you were saying about facial expressions. They say, Tom Baker says in the story about people are frightened of robots because of the case of Robots of Death, the lack of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of exemplified with Leela in that she has a difficult time reading the robots because she's a huntress.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking to do things on instinct, and those instincts are being thwarted by the robot's lack of human characteristics.
Yeah, it's hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I love the way she calls them mechanical men, you know. And
creepy mechanical men.
Which they are, let's face it.
Wait here. I'm going to get the others. If you're right about this, you can't imagine what it'll mean.
What do you mean I can't imagine what it'll mean? This isn't the only robot-dependent civilization in the galaxy, you know.
Pool here.
Go to Yuvanov's quarters as fast as you can. Zilda came on the command speaker and accused him of being the killer. He's left control like a scale 20 blow.
I'm on my way. No, you wait here.
Sit down. Sit down. What did you call those robots?
Creepy mechanical men.
Yes. You know, people never really lose that feeling of unease with robots. The more of them there are, the greater the unease, and of course, the greater the dependence. It's a vicious circle. People can neither live with them nor exist without them.
So what happens if the Strangler is a robot?
Oh, I should think it's the end of a civilization.
Let's face it.
And she has an interesting time, too. And every time the robot would talk, at first she would answer them. And later on, she learned, I don't have to talk to these people. She said, I don't have to answer to you. You're just a creepy mechanical man.
Yeah.
The story, Chris Boucher is just top notch. And he's an excellent writer. And really just pulls it all together in this story, and just a home run for me. And if we're doing TARDIS groans, it would be 5 out of 5, of course, but we're doing this a little more as recommendations for people. If you've only joined the show either with David Tennant or Matt Smith or Christopher Eccleston, and this DVD made its way into your hands via Netflix or iTunes, I think this is one of the classics that you may be able to download. I'm looking now as we speak if it's in the iTunes library.
I think it might be, yeah.
This won't throw you off too far. You have a classic combination of Doctor and Companion, a great story. You don't really need to know too much background heading into this. And, of course, it doesn't end on a cliffhanger or anything like that.
There's no overall story arc. There's no cracks. There's no...
It's a clean in and it's a clean out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking, though. I don't see it on the...
We can talk... I mean, we're okay with spoilers on the older shows, right? We can just say... Or do we do a spoiler alert if I want to mention?
Well, we can do a spoiler alert, but we can cover it.
So, obviously, our villain, who, you know... David Bailey playing Dask, which ends up being Aaron Capel. Not the best of reveals.
I just have to make a point that name is very Blake Seven-ish.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, like, there was a scene where we're supposed to see this visual effect that's covering the face of who the culprit is.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't work too well.
Did a pretty terrible job. I'm like, oh, well, that's that Dask character, isn't it? You know. Now, that being said... He did a great job when he is revealed as the mind behind as Tan Capel. And now I understand that he's now the new celestial toy maker for the Big Finish line.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
He's now been, I think, in 3 or 4 of them. I haven't gotten to them yet.
Was he in Nightmare Fair when they did Nightmare?
Yeah. All the lost stories when they bring back the celestial toy maker and more. You know, I've read that there's now a Companion Chronicles. Just Charlie Pollard and the Celestial Toymaker together.
Wow.
And David Bailey. And so he's bringing it. I mean, again, I feel terrible for not having heard them yet, and I will get to them. We'll talk in a couple of years about how that worked out for me. But but just from his performance in Robots of Death, I can completely see him as a replacement for Michael Gow's toy maker if you're going to carry on with that character. Mm-hmm. So great work, Big Finish. You know, I haven't heard it. Great work.
Yeah, it was a sweet piece of casting there.
Oh, big time, yeah. You know, so yeah, great stuff.
All right, gents, any other thoughts on The Robots of Death?
James?
Just see it. If you haven't seen it, see it. We spoiled it for you. But go out and see it either way. Make sure you...
There's robots and there's death.
What more do you want? What more do you want? I think we've pretty much said it all. I mean,
yeah,
it's a terrific episode and I think quite a nice introduction for a new fan to the show or a relatively new fan to the show. It'd have to be on the list, really, wouldn't it? It's a classic Tom Baker episode. Yeah. The pacing's brilliant. There's very little that you can sort of take fault with, and it was mainly because it was just so revolutionary for the time. I mean, I think there's a lot that came after it that borrowed from it in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, it really is revolutionary for its time, I think. And
well, when you think of the highlights of the Tom Baker era, I think this is one of those episodes that pop up, you know, that always pops up.
Certainly with Leela, the ones with Leela. So, yeah, definitely.
All right. So we recommend, if you haven't seen it yet, to check it out. And as always, put yourself in that mindset from that time era, and I think you're all set.
Yeah, or if you're a Doctor Who fan who's introducing Doctor Who to someone who hasn't seen it, definitely make sure they see this.
Yeah, this is one that it could be a first, or it could be in the early viewings of Classic Who, somewhere in the beginning there. I think we would, if we're going to do this from time to time, would we recommend this? We'll give a recommendation whether or not we would think this is a good first story. Because if you saw this this is your fifth classic Doctor Who, let's say, yeah, it's perfect. It fits, you know, well, you can pick right up. Know, but if this was the first one you ever saw, would you be a Doctor Who fan?
Well, you know, we get this question a lot. People calling or writing to us saying, well, you know, I want to introduce my friend to Doctor Who. Which episode should I introduce him or her to? And many times that comes down to knowing who your friend is. If your friend is someone that is into murder mysteries, this would be, you know, the one to get, or, you know, or has a thing about robots or whatever, or, you know, it could be just your regular recommendation for anyone, but especially, okay, you know, if I always recommend people to find out a little bit about who you're introducing the show to, and then pick an episode that they could relate to.
Yeah. I would put this as one of I would feel comfortable showing this to someone first as a standalone episode. I think the scenes with Tom Baker and Louise Jameson and the TARDIS in the beginning kind of spell it out. The TARDIS and that they're traveling together and they jump into their mystery. Mm. So it's fine.
The whole line about magic too kind of explains that she's a primitive.
Yeah. So it works. It sets itself up nicely. Like say Blink, you can show it to anybody and they should be able to get something out of it.
Definitely.
So long as they realize it's from 1977.
Early in 1977.
James. Early, so exactly.
James, you were going to say?
I was just going to say that I completely agree with everything that Josh has said. I think that it's a perfect introduction to Doctor Who. The pacing's fantastic. It's only four episodes. You can churn through it in a little over an hour, so it's almost like watching a movie. The holes and perhaps things that are a little bit difficult to understand if you're a beginner, well, you could easily explain them just to somebody and get through them without much difficulty. So I think it's a very good episode, not only to introduce newbies to Who in terms of they've never seen an episode of Doctor Who before, but also to likewise to fans of the newer series of the modern series, if you like, to say, you know, harking back and show them this one, because it's Tom Baker who sort of everybody recognizes as the Doctor. You know, he was
especially
sort of the
archetype
of Doctor. Yeah, exactly. And it's got a lot of the key elements of a Doctor Who story. I mean, we've hearkened to it and said, oh, well, it's like a murder mystery, and it owes a lot to things like Agatha Christie and so on and so forth. But really, that's what Doctor Who is a lot of the time, is it's a mystery of some description, and you're trying to figure it out as the Doctor is as well, and see what's going on. And there's a lot of revolutionary things in this episode that you can't sort of walk away from. So even if you're a sci-fi fan, never seeing Doctor Who before, it's perfect from that perspective.
Philip Hinchcliffe actually has one record. He said this was, and you know, his eyes, the best episode that he produced.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's a pretty...
That's the best episode. Pretty
big statement, because he's produced some damn good Doctor Who.
He considers this his best, and that's on the commentary. I did my homework. And he said that, like, him with his era with, of course, script up, you know, Bob Holmes. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole Hinchcliffe Holmes, he thought this was the best that they had put out.
Well, that's missing is John Pertwee presenting it in the beginning, as he did at the Whodunit series.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There you go. No, there was a movie. I don't think there was a moving finger moment in it, but it's a great, it's solid mystery as well as space opera, and that's what it's all about.
All right, well, we'll be right back on Doctor Who Podshock.
We've come to the point in our show where we want to talk about Audible.com and make a recommendation for a Audible.com title. As you may know, Audible.com is the leading provider of digital audiobooks. They have over 75,000 titles to choose from in every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, science fiction, and so much more. Audible content is compatible with iPods, MP3 players, and over 500 devices for your listening pleasure anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. For you, listeners of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. How cool is that? Now, being that Robots of Death is Louise Jameson's second story as Leela in Doctor Who, and being that Joshua was speaking earlier about meeting up with Toby Haddock, what better selection than The Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf, which is by Toby. It's narrated by Toby and Louise Jameson with Colin Baker. It's a two-part BBC 7 adaptation of his stand-up show about Doctor Who fandom and his lifelong obsession with Doctor Who. This can be your selection. To download your free audiobook, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap for your free audiobook. It's really funny. We interviewed Toby back on Doctor Who Podshock 141 at Gallifrey. I believe it was 2009. Very funny, very funny. If you haven't checked out Doctor Who Podshock 141, check that out as well. But this show is hilarious. This stand-up show, I really recommend seeing this in person if you can. But if you can't, this is a great way to get a taste of it. And speaking of getting a taste of it, let's have a taste of it right now.
I am known as the Doctor, or at least a tenth part of him. Let me take you back in time 30 years, and I don't mean by going to Blackpool. I'm going to take you on a journey to witness the creation of one of the most peculiar creatures in the universe. Odder than the Ood, stranger than the Sycorax. This is the story of a Doctor Who fan.
This is the BBC, and Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf, in which a Doctor Who scarf gets eaten by some moths.
I suppose I'd better start by coming out of the closet. But my closet is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, because I am a Doctor Who fan. I was born to be a Doctor Who fan. I wasn't a strapping youth. I wasn't born with the macho gene, the confident gene, the sartorial elegance gene, spindly arms, hay fever, and psoriasis. That's eczema for middle-class people. My cadaverous physique was wrapped in a skin that looked like a raspberry ripple, but with a slightly different kind of flake. So I wasn't confident, I wasn't strong, and I needed a hero. Because I didn't have a father figure. My dad vanished when I was 4. Not inside a blue police box. That would have been cool.
What do you mean you're not coming back? You've got four kids, for Christ's sake. Just come back and we can talk.
Come on, give it me now.
Now, you listen to me. I can't manage four kids on my own. What do you think I am, Superwoman?
Now on BBC One, just to make Toby Haydock feel better, it's the latest adventure for Doctor Who, The Invisible Enemy, in which the Doctor encounters an enemy he can't see.
Oh, that theme. Still makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. Doctor Who was my one constant male presence. He was my hero. Not like any other hero on the box, I couldn't identify with any of them. They were perfect. They always bagged the girl.
Greetings, soft focus alien female. Our mission is to seek out new life and new civilizations. This is what we on Earth call kissing.
Whereas the Doctor was above all that. Different. He didn't look like he'd spent all week in the gym, he didn't care about money, and his outfit suggested a certifiable haberdasher, sure, but a refreshing lack of ego. And he didn't take himself too seriously. He was a hero who stood up for the people, the dispossessed, the little man, you and me.
You know, the very powerful and the very stupid have one thing in common. They don't alter their views to fit the facts. They alter the facts to fit the views.
He wasn't always certain. He wasn't always right. But no matter how fearful the odds, he was always...
Ah, great stuff. You know, it's very funny, yet very touching at the same time. I highly recommend it. Check it out. That could be your free selection. Now, to download your free audiobook today, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. ARTTRAP for your free audio book. If you're a Doctor Who fan, you're going to want to hear this and have it in your collection. And we also like to remind you to check out Dragon Slayer Comics and Fantasy. They have stores now in both Texas and Washington. That's in Austin and San Antonio, Texas, and now in Bellevue, Washington. They sell Doctor Who action figures, CDs, comics. They may even have this CD as well. They also have board games, role-playing games, card games, graphic novels, everything you might expect in a science fiction slash fantasy comic book store. Well, you don't need me to tell you. Go to their website. Go to dlayer.net. That's D as in dragon, layer.net. And also wish them a happy 24th anniversary. Yes, it's their 24th anniversary. Make sure you wish them a happy anniversary from Dr. Hugh Podchalk. You can do that in person, once again, in Austin or San Antonio, Texas, or now in their new store in Bellevue, Washington. Give them a call at 512-454-2399 or visit their website at dlayer.net. That's D as in dragon, layer.net. Now, for some reason, I'm thinking of Tara Wheeler. I'm not sure why. Let's check in with her at San Diego Comic-Con, where she files this live report.
Howdy! This is Tara Destara. I'm at San Diego Comic-Con 2010. I'm at the Sales Pavilion. I am surrounded by about, I'd say 40 or 50 cosplayers, all dressed as various incarnations of the Doctor, companions. There's Cat Nun, and the wonderful, charming, fabulous John Levine is here, signing autographs and being his normal, lovely self. We have a Dalek lady. We have, let's see here. We got a Clockwork Man. Very nice. Let's see here. There's a Seven. There's a Jack. There's a... several fours, several tens, and a master, at least one master. Anyhow, we're all having a lovely time here on Sunday, and sorry y'all aren't here with us. This is TARDIS Tara signing off.
Thank you once again, Tara. Excellent job covering San Diego Comic-Con for us. One of these days, we'll have to get there ourselves. Until then, it's great having Tara there, being our ears, eyes, nose, and feet on the ground there at San Diego Comic-Con.
All right, and we're back on Doctor Who Podshock. Ken Deep, Louis Trapani, James Norton, and of course one of our two L.A. correspondents, Joshua Lou Friedman.
Good to have you back, Josh.
And so. we're just about out of time, actually. But just wanted to wrap things up and say congratulations again to Josh and we've been he's been a big help when we're out in LA and doing Gallifrey behind the scenes. Just the enormous amount of work that you put in, as well as everybody involved in Doctor Who Podchuck, but particular in LA, you put a lot of work in and are helping us even going. We haven't even gotten to the 2011 Gallifrey yet. We're 7 months out and we've already begun work on it. So
it shows
you how much, you know,
Gallifrey goes 22. Into
putting into a lot of program.
It'll be here before you know it though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Don't it always creeps on you. Yeah, don't blink. It'll creep up on you.
Don't blink. Speaking of don't blink, I see Stephen Moffat's tweeting now.
Well, if that's really
yes,
him or not.
I followed him.
Because there's been other Twitter accounts with that name, so I'm...
Well, even the people like the fake Moffat have surrendered, and it appears legitimate because... he's doing some work at the moment with his wife and with Mark Gatiss.
Well,
Mark Gatiss is following him
and
has tweeted
him. I give some credence that he's using the same image that he's using on his Facebook account, so that's, you know, leads some credence there. But I'm always skeptical when, you know, someone, you know, like that is on Twitter, because it's been happened so many times before where it just turns out to be a ruse and it's not really the person.
Yeah, I'm very big on that. I have actual celebrity friends that don't do Facebook or Twitter because of that very reason. They're like, you know, people out there who just aren't me. And
it's easy to deny it if you say I don't have a Twitter account.
Yeah. But like, I've been in that embarrassing situation where I thought I was on a page of someone I worked with, and then I'll see them again. And I'll be like, hey, did you get my message? They're like, no, because I don't have a Facebook page, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh, wow, sorry. duped again. No, it's happened a couple times. So I'm really careful about that when I, you know, at the same time with, like, who I know or any celebrity that they, you know, there's some that have their Facebook pages and they put themselves out there.
Well, anyone that's well-known should actually make a point to having one just so you can secure the names before some other, you know, bozo takes it.
But a lot of actors like to put themselves out there and it helps promote their material.
Yeah,
so it's
that's
good,
what I'm saying.
It's a double-edged it's a double-edged sword, but careful. You know, you get to one point where you should just kind of, you know, the anonymity kind of it works best for you. So we'll see.
Well, you can. We're not anonymous. You can send us your feedback by calling the Podchuck public call box at 206-600-6517. That's 24 hours a day, and just be aware that's a 206 area code in the U.S. So, but, you know, in today's age of mobile phones and phone plans and whatever, that shouldn't be an issue. And you probably can use Skype to call that number if you're calling elsewhere, and leave a voicemail message there for possible inclusion for feedback on Doctor Who Podchuck.
Yeah, feedback at podchuck.net as well. And all of us are on Twitter, Facebook, all the various...
Well, also our main site, which is thegallifreyembassy.org or podchuck.net. You can find us all there, and we all have blogs there, and, not everyone's...
Go ahead. We just stomped on poor Josh. What were you going to say, Josh?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of feedback, and call in. It's Ken Deep versus Josh Friedman. It's going to be Red Dwarf versus Big Seven. Red Dwarf versus Blake Seven. Will Ken love Red Dwarf and will I love Blake Seven? And who's going to finish him first? And will we be fans of those prospective assignments?
I think you have it a little easier because I think there's more Red Dwarf episodes, aren't they? But they're only half hours, right?
They're only half hours, man.
Okay. I think
it's very comparable, and I'm looking forward to diving into Blake Seven. Our deadline is Gallifrey. Oh, that's
that doesn't
so
give you much time.
Yeah,
7 months. Can I have to brush up on all the Davis episodes
to consume in 7 months? Okay.
Let each year take it. We got to watch every one and watch them in order. That's the deal.
Billy is doing some hootenannies. That's what he calls his viewing parties here. We'll be marathoning some Davis in between now and Galley. So I have a Red Dwarf to digest and rewatching Davis in the Davis era in order to be. Properly
answered. I don't know where you find the time. Oh, speaking of Davis, and you had mentioned this earlier, Ken, that the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive figures are a Fifth Doctor with the Master, Master. The Anthony
Ainley. Yeah, from Planet of Fire. And I think also the regeneration, Davison's wearing Tom Baker's maroon.
Oh, I didn't see that one. I saw him with...
I don't know if that's an exclusive. I was on the toy page that had the other stuff.
I saw him with the hat, the Peter Davison Fifth Doctor hat that he had on, which the regular figure that's out now doesn't have.
Right. Yeah, this is... it's a nice set. There's been a lot of interesting things. The 11 Doctors set is wonderful, and there's a Unearthly Child one with Hartnell and the TARDIS, yes, with him with the hat on and stuff. I mean, the amount of toys and the quality level is just spectacular. Oh, if I was only a kid again.
You're a kid again.
That's true.
Speaking of Planet Fire, that night we got together with Nicola Bryant.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, she looks a lot better now than she's ever. I mean, she looks amazing. I mean, a lot of us from Planet of Fire, she pulled a Superior. I get that. But today, she looks better than she's ever looked. She's just amazing. She's eternally beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. We saw her at Galley last year, and she's a knockout.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Like, I mean, I'd seen her at Gallifrey and everything, but just in a social situation, wow. Wow.
I'm going to drop a little bit of early news. Saved it for the very, very end of the show, of course. So anybody who's already clicked off, they'll miss it. But 2010 is the 25th anniversary of the Gallifreyan Embassy, as we've been saying at the start of every show. And Lewis and I and Beth Trekman, who is a longtime organizer of the Gallifreyan Embassy, are working together on putting a get-together, an event, a 25th anniversary event, probably for November of this year. And I'm mentioning it early because I'm hoping it's going to be a limited event. It won't be a gigantic thing or something. It's going to be for a small crowd here in New York on Long Island, most likely. And we've been in the process of putting some things together, scouting out some locations. But put a few nickels aside, as we're going to try to have a nice event here for the 25th anniversary, make it something special. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Lewis was actually kind of he was tweeting about where we went, a British themed restaurant, Beatles themed restaurant, mm-hmm, of all things, here on Long Island. So we'll see if we can get it all together in time. We're shooting for November. Yeah. So leave your calendars open. I know November's kind of busy with Chicago TARDIS and a few other events, New England Fan Experience and the Gallifreyan Embassy 25th anniversary event.
So unlike the Chase, the U.S. version of the DVD release, the Chase, the Beatles will be present.
Yeah. And I have to say thank you to Joshua, who brought me home a Region 2 copy of the Chase. So
you can have that. Yeah.
It was just fantastic. I mean, it's just a solid effort on your part, my friend.
No worries. Yeah. Well, you know, you hooked me up with a film as back that I've been looking for. So I really, it was a tit for tat. No worries, man. No.
Next trip for Mosey.
Yeah. They'll bring the Mosey back. Yeah, you'll get a kick out of the picture. I'm sure you're streaming it, those of you who are watching along with the listening. Yeah,
I think a lot of it.
Well, we have to have David on the show. I mean, he's just a fantastic
guy. Really? He should be able to be okay to talk about his collection, but tread carefully. But, yeah, there's – oh, my God. I can't even begin, guys. I just can't.
Right. Well, we'll save it for your next appearance.
But no, you talk to him. Hopefully get some out of him. But I'm sure he'd love to be on the show. I know he's starting to do, podcasts. And I know Tara has talked to him on a podcast recently
on
as well.
On Happiness Patrol.
I believe, Tara and Lewis. So get him on the show, guys.
The spring.
No, yeah, you want him on the show talking about what he does. Trust me, it's amazing. Wealth of knowledge there. So,
you can also celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Gallifreyan Embassy and the 5th anniversary of Doctor Who Podchuck by attending our next meetup on Second Life, taking place on Saturday, the 21st of August, 2010. It's free to join in. See our website for details. Be sure to stay on top of all things Doctor Who and Doctor Who Podchuck on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. You can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow Doctor Who Podchuck on Twitter at twitter.com/podchuck. You can follow James on Twitter at twitter.com/JamesNorton. You can follow Ken on Twitter at twitter.com/KenDeep. You can follow Joshua on Twitter at twitter.com/JL Friedman, and of course you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/LewisFriedman. Trapani. Please note we did not receive a review copy of the DVD Doctor Who Robots of Death. Our review is based on copies we purchased ourselves. All right, well, until next time, come back for another exciting episode of Doctor Who Podcast. Thank you, Josh, once again for coming back.
Thanks so much, yeah.
Always, great, I'll see you the next time there's a robot in the title of an episode.
Absolutely.
Or coming back for the android invasion. Or
or the androids of Tara.
Or something, that'd be great.
We'll have you all and Tara cheers. On.
That's a great idea.
The Tara of androids, yeah.
Exactly. Got yourselves a date.
Well, she'll be our hopefully, if she's feeling better, our eyes and ears.
Yeah, she's going to San Diego Comic-Con. So I think, yeah. I don't think,
yes.
She's feeling better now. So I don't think, I think David, her husband, is suffering a little bit now, but I think they're definitely not going to miss that event.
That's at good. San Diego. So we'll have a report.
They're not bringing their TARDIS to Comic-Con. No, that's just for
I don't think they are. I mean, I think they'd be more than willing if I know that she had offered it to BBC America last year and they weren't interested, so, but you know, I don't know about this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, as far as I know, no.
As long as it's at Gallifrey, and has she taken it to Chicago TARDIS? I haven't done anything.
No.
So just Gallifrey, really?
The next event, I think, is Gallifrey, yeah, because I don't think they're going to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Or
what about DragonCon? Yeah.
No, so I think the next one on deck, and I think I've talked her into coming to ICON next year, so maybe the TARDIS will be on.
The thing with the TARDIS is that they have to, they don't fly that. They have to actually drive the TARDIS.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they drove it.
Unlike the real TARDIS, it's not transdimensional. So.
Can't be there.
It would be much easier if you could get it there that way.
Please,
dealing with the
airlines.
Easier.
I wish I had a TARDIS to get to Gallifrey.
All right, boys, let's rock and roll.
All right. Cheers, everyone.
Yes. See everybody next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
See you guys next week. See you next time, or see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Doctor Who Podchalk, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podchalk is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podchalk. You can email us at feedback@podchalk.net. Doctor Who Podchalk theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Would you like a jelly baby?
Shut up!
Well, a simple no thank you would have been sufficient.